a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, he need cut a game.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
A kudigi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and you're also watching it on YouTube and Facebook all over Turtle Island, and we appreciate all you people watching us. We're going to have an awesome show today here, Wendy. We're going to have Heather Keeler and Dr. Stately, State Representative Heather Keeler. And as you all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Native American Community Clinic. They partnered with the American Indian Cancer Society, and tomorrow they are hosting a vaccine event at the American Indian Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue from 3 to 6 p.m. So go head on down tomorrow from 3 to 6.
Awesome. Hey, you know, we discuss local and Native issues, and as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. My name is Wakunja Hade, and my colonized name is Robert Pilot. So why don't we get to it? Let's get to it right away with Ogama with the news. Welcome, Ogama, as always.
Hey, Anin Buju, everybody. I'm Ogama Ginui Kwe with some news for you. I always want to start with some news from the environment, looking to stop Line 3, build back fossil-free, and have a just transition into a clean energy future. I mentioned last night on the show that there is the People versus Fossil Fuels rally happening in Washington, D.C. from October 11th through 15th. There is a kickoff call happening tonight at 7 p.m. It is going to be explaining what is going to happen over the 5 days of the rally and why it's important. And Indigenous people, pipeline fighters, water protectors, young people, scientists, faith leaders, and more are going to be talking on this call. It's going to be really exciting. This October, they're expecting thousands of people to go to D.C. and demand that President Biden end the fossil fuel era and take action as the climate president he chose to be. That call, again, is tonight, September 9th, 2021, at 7 p.m., and you can sign up for that link or to get signed up for that call at peopleversusfossilfuels.org. That's peopleversusfossilfuels.org. The link to sign up for that call is right at the top of the page. It'll say sign up to join the kickoff call on Thursday, September 9th. And if you're looking, if you can't make that call tonight, there's still more info on how to get involved for the October 11th through 15th. Date. You've got a little bit of time to plan, but that's going to be a huge event, and I'm really excited to see that come through. So I want to make sure you all know, kickoff call tonight for that rally. Another exciting event that is coming up here in October, it's October 18th. Joy Harjo is coming to visit. The United States Poet Laureate Joy Harjo is coming to visit the Northland virtually. So they're doing a free event, which is hosted by the Fond du Lac Tribal Community College and the American Indian, I apologize, I'm missing the AICHO, the American Indian Community Housing Organization, I think is what it says. So Joy Harjo, if you have not yet heard of her, is a writer and performer. She's from the Muscogee Nation, Creek Nation, and she is serving her second term as the 23rd Poet Laureate of the United States. She has 9 books of poetry and several plays, children's books, and 2 memoirs, one of which is called Crazy Brave and the other is called Poet Warrior. I will personally probably be coming to this event. If any of you want a little tidbit about me, I really enjoy poetry, and I'm really proud to have a Native American Poet Laureate. So I want to let you know this is coming up in Minnesota here. There's a registration link on the Facebook event. It's called Bringing Joy, and then it's translated in Ojibwe. But if you search Bringing Joy, if you're Ojibwe, it's not that good. It should come up for you. So,
yeah. I'm a poet, too, and my feet show it. They're Longfellows. Hey, I'll be here all week.
But I'm just, we need to get like a little, you know, a little drum.
We do. I think I do on the Roadcaster. I'll just have to upload it.
Also in other news in Indian country, the Indians.com, Indians with a Z, and as you know, we occasionally have Kevin Aberask on who reports for them. They just posted updated today that the Indian Health Services, or IHS, has updated its coronavirus data for results through yesterday, September 8th. And for the first time, they're starting to list cumulative percents at high rates, which is the highest that they've been since the beginning of COVID. So some of those areas that are listed with high percentages include Oklahoma City, California, Bemidji at 13.1%, Phoenix, Nashville, Portland, Billings, Albuquerque, and then even the Alaska and Navajo regions are still on here. So, I mean, we're looking at really high percentages. Oklahoma City sitting at 17.6% for a 7-day rolling average positivity increase, an increase of 17%. So all 12 IHS areas nationally are seeing higher COVID-19 rates for the first time since the onset of the pandemic, a little more than 18 months ago now. So this is really something that we need to keep an eye on. And as Native people, we need to remember our responsibility to our relatives, to one another, to take precautions, to get vaccinated, to wear masks, and to take care of one another as far as that goes. The Oklahoma tribes, with their really high positive rates, are actually preparing to start giving booster shots in the COVID-19 battle. So formal guidance from IHS on how and when to give vaccine booster shots are kind of still in the works. But some tribes in Oklahoma are not waiting. They're basically armed with the news of the booster shot guidelines are on the horizon, and they're continuing their fight against COVID-19 with a low vaccination rate that they have there. And they're going to be starting to do booster shots for those who are vaccinated as soon as they can. So I commend you, Oklahoma, and all you're doing to try to take care of the COVID-19 pandemic in your area. And I wanted to let people know that that's coming up. Another thing that's coming up is that President Biden is going to have new vaccine mandates that are expected to affect about 100 million Americans. In the what is being called the most forceful pandemic action, President Joe Biden has announced federal vaccine requirements, which are going to affect as many as 100 million Americans in an all-out effort to increase COVID-19 vaccinations. And I believe they're going to include healthcare, people who serve in healthcare.
Yeah, there was a whole big list, Wendy, right? Anyone over 100 employees, too.
Any business who had more than 100 or more. Yeah, healthcare most of them are all mandated.
And government employees. Yeah. I mean, he's going to bring out 100 million people, and I know all the conspiracy people are going to be freaking out about this, but
it's really,
he's got to do something. So
yeah, he's got to do something, and he's doing the right thing. So I commend him.
Yes. Yep. The quote from the article that I'm reading, that I'm pulling this from NPR, says that Biden said that we've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and refusal of those who have been unvaccinated, the unvaccinated minority, can cause a lot of damage, and they are. So, and also, I apologize for the background noise in my house today. I've got two kids and a dog here today. So
sounds like they're riding the dog now.
Well, I don't know if she's big enough for that, but I did knock, so I'm sure she's just late on the uptake as far as that goes. So those are kind of like the big ones that I wanted to hit for today. And then, you know, as we all know, the U.S. Supreme Court is now reviewing another case with ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act. Mm-hmm. So the Court of Appeals is basically they upheld the law and Congress's authority to enact it, but the judges are now invalidating some of the law's placement preferences, including Native American families and Native foster homes, claiming they violate equal protection rights under the Constitution. Oh, and by the way, the Justice Department is also suing Texas over their new abortion ban.
That was so big news today. That came up at 2 o'clock today, and I was listening to the Devil's Advocate, and they popped in there. They were hoping that some of the Trump boys were going to get indicted, but this is just as good news, if not better.
It is great news, and I was waiting for it. I couldn't imagine that Texas was going to be allowed to let that continue, quite frankly. So I'm proud and I'm excited that this is happening.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Hey, up next, we got State Representative Heather Keeler stopping in. And, you know, this is her off time, so that means she's probably working twice as hard on her other stuff. And we just want to stop in and see how she's doing and check in. So you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll have Dr. Stately on later, too.
Stay with us.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me, Wen. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanjahare.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. And I just want to mention again, tomorrow at the American Indian Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue, they are hosting a vaccine event between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. So head on over tomorrow.
Wow. Hey, we are always blessed to have our sister, in Ho-Chunk we say, Chujunk on this week, and that's Heather Keeler, which means our niece. And we when I walk around Turtle Island and talk to other politicians that know Heather and work with Heather, they just give me like so much good feelings because they say how hard she works. And mm-hmm. we know that, but it's great to see that her peers see that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's daunting. And I know, State Representative Heather Keeler, thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me. I had said in the chat before, it's always so good to be here because it feels like home in a space where we can have open, honest conversations that, you know, support our communities and the people and our relatives around us. So thanks for having me again.
Well, it's our pleasure. We just want to check in because I think one of the things when we first met you, we used to do the Sunday Night Symposium every Sunday. And what was powerful about that it was a check-in, that we were all checking in on each other and making sure everyone's okay. And I know Heather's got a baby. You've worked really hard, and, you know, being a state representative has turned into like a full-time job when it's part-time pay and supposed to be a part-time job. So a peenie geegee for everyone around Turtle Island and what you do, Heather.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things I wish that we would talk a little more about when we do candidate recruitment is this idea that, like, we're in session part of the year, but to really do the work that we're here to do, you know, it's focused on relationships and that never stops. You know, like, I feel like I'm really busy now because I'm connecting with my constituents. I'm showing up in spaces, you know, having these difficult conversations because we continue to work to build. Either we're implementing the things that we passed to make sure that they're implemented with the right intentions in the right spaces for the right populations, or we're working to listen on what we need to start to develop for next session already. And so the work doesn't stop. It just looks a little bit different. And I'm always humbled to be able to be in those spaces. But it is really eye-opening. And I hope to be somebody that has honest conversations with people who are considering running because we need you at the table. I just want to be very transparent and honest and upfront about what it looks like and the commitment and the sacrifice it takes to do this job.
Right. And we know you have a family and an older son that's doing all these cool things involved in school. And, you know, you don't want to miss that. And then you miss it. And then you feel bad. And then you have to have, you know, there's just, I can't even imagine the juggling that you're doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's my life as a mom, right? Like, we multitask all the time. It's just layered differently. You know, yeah, my high schooler is in football right now. And, you know, I missed a lot when I was in session. And so I really try my hardest to make him a priority. My little guy started kindergarten. I'm licensed through ICWA. So, you know, I have a 2-week-old placed with me right now. So just trying to be a mom, but also still doing the work. I think the beauty of being a mom is that I bring that voice to the table because I, you know, I'm living and breathing these decisions that our state makes and how it impacts our next generations. And so just finding the balance. One thing I've talked about here with you all before is, you know, finding the area of self-care. And, you know, we have to take care of our own soul to create a foundation that makes us strong enough to serve our communities. And that's one thing that I'm really trying to practice. And investing in my kids and being in that space is the best way for me to build my foundation to do the work I need to for everybody else.
That's great. Heather, I want you to tell us about the ICWA and the baby that you have right now, if you don't mind.
Sure. It's one of the things I don't talk a lot about. One of the things I'm learning in this job, and I actually had a conversation with my campaign manager earlier today, is, you know, we're raised to be humble about the things that we do. And so as a politician, you know, you have to talk about who you are and the work that you're doing. And that's actually something that's really difficult for me. But it helps me bring a lens of life to the table. And so I've been licensed through White Earth. So ICWA, a lot of our reservations are starting to license people off reservations because we know that close to 60% of our indigenous population lives off the reservations or on other reservations. And ICWA is something that's really important because it's putting indigenous, you know, kids with indigenous families. It's funny because the 2-week-old that I have now, you know, we listen to Native American flute music and it calms him. We listen to, you know, our drums and we burn sage. And so it's just this creating this space for him to know who he is and the foundation in which he has. And so I've been licensed for, geez, almost 6 years now. And it's funny because I told him, don't call me in session. Like, I can't take any kids in session. Wait until September. And I think they waited until like August 20th or something.
September 1st. That was it, Heather. They have a baby for you. So how long will you have this baby?
I just do respite care. You know, I really just love them in transition while a more permanent house can, you know, prepare for them really well, especially when you have newborns out of the hospital. Sometimes families have to get cribs together. And we all know, right, like preparing for a baby when you have 9 months to do it takes a lot of work. And so I just find my role to love them in transition and plant the seeds of caring and compassion in those first couple days. And then hopefully I take pictures of them and I make like baby books, because I think a lot of the stories that I've heard from kids who have been in the foster system is they just don't have pictures of them, you know, in their childhood or when they were babies. And those are such important times. And so just trying to do my best to play that, you know, auntie role as we create the support for our next generation. I love it. You know, and as I do this, I continue to pray for their family and their mom, because I don't ever look at this as like a foster to adopt situation. I think that that's a harmful mind frame. I think that we need to continue to pray for the families to heal, because I talk a lot about family preservation. And it leads me, you know, like for the policy lens, it's interesting, like as a licensed home, the amount of money that they provide for me to do this job, you know, they show up with that. They buy a car seat, they buy a stroller, they buy clothes and formula. And when you think about the amount of money they give a home like me to care for a child, you know, we could keep moms in healthy living environments. We could support them, you know, in many different ways. I think we just need to look at how we reallocate our funds to support our families for family preservation, so that not so many of our kids are out of their households.
Well, Heather, that's kind of what Sandy from Blood Memories says too. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about what you're doing. You know, I know you got some other work and jobs going on, but I really need to check out because I feel like I'm really getting emotional here because I was an adoptee mm-hmm. and in the foster care for 18 months. So yeah. It's pretty
and Robert,
hard for me
you
right
don't
now.
Have, Robert, also, you do not have a lot of baby pictures. That's another thing that really hit home for us because you don't. Like, I could look through my pictures and see when I was a baby, but you can't. It's really hard.
I'm going to pop in here with you guys, too, because we're all emotional right now. We appreciate and love the work that you're doing for that baby and for all the other kids that have come through your care, Heather. That's really important work that you're doing. And I think you're right about reallocating funds, 100%. You know, there's those things that come around on social media every now and then. You know, a family is given maybe $600 of food stamps to help with them or of public support. And then if they can't show that they're taking care of that kid to standard, then they take those kids away and give another family maybe $1,200 or $1,800 even to take care of the same kids. And there's a gap there that things are happening in the foster care system and in the care system in general, where we could really be providing more support to keep children out of this system and keep them with their families in the first place. And I'm really excited to hear that you're working for those kinds of things and standing for those kinds of things in the legislature, because that's a very small portion of the voice there.
You know, I'll tell you, Red Lake does an amazing job. We went up this summer to their State of the Bands, and, you know, they talked about their program and their family reunification program. And I think they had almost 100 children returned home because they, you know, they invest in that family reunification, family preservation piece of it. They've changed the wording, and I don't want to even talk about it because I don't know it accurately, but they don't call us like foster parents. It's like families with care, families in care, you know, like it's all about the language and the mind frame that we have. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's just another unique lens that I bring to the table and why it's so important that many of you who, you know, live in these spaces and work and live in these experiences, why, you know, why it's important for people like me to be at the table. Because it's not that I don't think people have thought about it. I just don't think people understand the system enough to know how it's impacting people until you really see it in real life like I do.
Wow, Heather, really.
And then, Heather, very quickly, because we have to close out here, but if somebody was interested in doing what you're doing and they're Indigenous, who would they contact?
Well, every tribal headquarters has a ICW. So literally, okay. If you just Google like White Earth ICW or Red Lake, sure. You know, ICW. And I just also want to say I'm not a member of White Earth, but because it's the closest reservation to me in proximity, they've worked with me to be licensed through them. So I can always share information and maybe you can share it out on your Facebook page and stuff as well.
That'd be great.
Yeah, well, Pini Gigi again, Heather, for being on and really touching my heart again. And
thank you for everything that you do.
Yeah.
And be proud of it and talk about it.
Up next, Dr. Stately. We'll be right back.
Stay with us.
Supporting the best local and independently owned restaurants in the Twin Cities has never been easier. You'll find an expansive list of local dining options at eatlocalminnesota.com, from classic American comfort food to authentic flavors from around the world. The next time you're out in South Minneapolis, make Nightingale off 26th and Lindale your go-to dining option. It's a comfortable neighborhood restaurant that features a delicious menu of American classics, plus a wide drink and cocktail selection. Nightingale has patio, dining room, and bar seating available, plus takeout and delivery. Current hours are 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. daily with the full menu until midnight. More at nightingalempls.com. Specializing in Szechuan and Peking cuisine, the Great Wall Chinese Restaurant has been a local favorite since 1981. They offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include the sesame chicken, imperial beef, and Peking duck. The Great Wall Restaurant is located off 45th and France, with takeout available too. More at greatwallrestaurant.us.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, you're not alone. Strong Hearts Native Helpline can help you through these difficult and uncertain times. Strong Hearts Helpline is a free 24/7 confidential domestic dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the chat now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
All of us want to make a difference. As veterans, we committed to protect our country. We served and sacrificed for the things that mattered most. Those experiences shaped our lives, even if it isn't always obvious to those around us. And now that we've served, our commitments have taken on a new meaning. We're husbands, wives, parents, friends, and neighbors, but sometimes we still feel alone. We forget that our biggest challenge can be to ask for support when we need it. The Veterans Crisis Line is here for all veterans, service members, and their loved ones. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255. It matters.
Hi, Minnesota. This is David Pakman, and you can catch my show weeknights for an in-depth look at politics and current events on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Claire Ferreira, president and owner of Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. My grandfather started Standard over 90 years ago, and we've been a family-owned company ever since, serving over 500,000 of our fellow Minnesotans. I'm proud to be the fourth generation of my family working in our business. And when we say we treat our employees and clients like family, we truly mean it. See how we can help your family stay comfortable all year long at standardheating.com. That's standardheating.com.
And right now, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning is having their fall triple savings sale. You'll have three ways to save: manufacturer rebates, utility rebates, and September promotions. When it all adds up, that means you could save up to $2,775 when you install a new furnace and AC in September. Plus, ask about installing a water heater with your purchase to save even more. Book an appointment today at standardheating.com to take advantage of their fall triple savings sale, where you could save up to $2,775 when you install a new furnace and AC. Offer valid through September 30th. That's standardheating.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lulia. Clear skies overnight with a low of 56. Then on Friday, sunny skies warming up to 81 degrees. Visit an Eat Local Minnesota restaurant today for a one-of-a-kind dining experience. Cafe Latte, Crooner Supper Club, Hazel's Northeast, Lake City Sandwiches, Nightingale, The Great Wall, and Victor's 1959 Cafe. More at eatlocalminnesota.com.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back. Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Native American Community Clinic. They partnered with the American Indian Cancer Society, and tomorrow they are having a vaccine event at the American Indian Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue between 3 and 6. So head on down tomorrow to get your vaccine.
Well, Dr. Stately's our guest, and he's usually on Mondays, but I think it's really great that you were able to stop today. Robert Lilligren had other things going on today. So thank you so much for Dr. Stately. But I didn't really realize Dr. Stately is the CEO at the Native American Community Clinic. I didn't really realize I need your help because I was an emotional wreck in this last segment talking to State Representative Heather Keeler here. We were talking a little bit about ICWA, and as you probably know, I was adopted in the foster care system too. I was just came back to our people. So her work, not only as a representative, really touched everybody's heart here. I think everyone was crying last segment. So I'm glad State Representative can still be on and listen and engage with you too. But thank you so much for being on, Dr. Stately.
For sure. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm sorry I missed this segment. I'm sure it was a very moving conversation, impactful for all of us. We've all had relatives probably in our immediate or extended family have been impacted by, you know, removal policies, you know, children or in our families. I don't tell people a whole lot of this, but I also, and that's actually how myself and my older brothers and sisters, we ended up in boarding school in 1968 because, you know, the policies that were in place in the 60s around, you know, what we now know is that, you know, neglect or the perception of neglect was a really formal sort of a real informal policy that was in enforced by, you know, Hennepin County's system at that time anyway, which is where I lived. And, you know, they were basically like, find a way to take care of your kids or we're going to take them from you. And her way of keeping us all together was to put us in St. Joe's Indian boarding school for children. So, you know, it's a really complex issue in a lot of our families. Contemporarily, right? It's not something that just happened many years ago. It's pretty recent, actually.
Right. And also, I mean, you have two young boys, too, and and are raising two young warriors, too, in a good way. And there's a whole story behind that, too.
Yeah, they were family adopted, right? So myself and my partner adopted them from his first cousin at birth. You know, and she was not able to take care of her boys when she realized that when she was pregnant with them, she already had two very small children that she, you know, she was 19 years old at the time. And, you know, we were fortunate that we were able to get, you know, we were given the opportunity and the gift, the privilege of adopting my beautiful sons from my partner's cousin. and we kept them in the family that way. But so many of our children are not that fortunate, you know, and it just is heartbreaking when you hear the statistics and you experience, you know, those things in your family systems. I have cousins and nieces and nephews who have not been able to keep their children, right? And it's really hard to experience that. So,
yeah, well, I appreciate it.
I definitely recognize how blessed I am. So my kids are really blessed. I tell them all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel blessed too in a lot of different ways too, that I did have good adopted parents. And that's not always the case, not always at all, when it comes to being adopted out in a white family.
Yeah, for sure. It's all too common as well. I know that Minnesota specifically, in the, you know, across the United States, has the worst record for out of home placement and removal of Native children and from their families, and placement in non-Indigenous homes. Wisconsin, which is where were you born in Wisconsin? I think your people are from Wisconsin, but you were born here.
Here's a quick story. So I was born in St. Paul. I was a high school teacher. And one of my all-time favorite students who graduated in 2000, we really hit it off, and her grandma died, and she wanted me to help her with her video with the death, and she was Native American. Fast forward quite a few years, 7 years ago, or 8 years ago now, and I found my birth mother, and she told me to get in touch with a certain person. I got in touch with him and also my uncle because he's waiting for me. And then I looked at this favorite student of mine was Facebook friends with him, and I asked her immediately. I text her, how do you know this person? She goes, well, this person is my uncle. He's my father's brother. And I went, I think we're related. And so I have so many relatives here in St. Paul that I didn't know were my relatives. And I want to give Heather Keeler opportunity, too, to jump in at any time, too. I know you have a baby in your hand right now, but I just want to throw that out to you, too, Heather, because you got some good.
I was just going to add this statistic. I know you said, like, we're worst in the state or in the nation. And we carried a bill this year to move our Native American ombudsperson for families out of on her own because of ICWA standards. You know, we just work with our families differently. And some of the data that we know, but it was really shocking to hear, is that we're worst in the nation, but we're worst in the nation that to 17 Native American children that are removed to the family or from a family to one white child.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like, you can't tell us that we're neglecting our children at a different, you know, level of that. It's just that the systems are not designed to support us. And so I kind of feel like I also need to say, this was not the intention of the updates that I wanted to bring, but I feel like it's creating a really important conversation. And important conversations come with emotions. And I just want to say how, like, humbling and honored I am to be here, and that a 2-week-old baby can create a conversation that could possibly be healing and empowering to a lot of people. And, like, I think we're all emotional when we talk about our next generations and our kids, but also, like, every single one of us, you know, are connected to this. And so it's saying that this is something that we have to heal as a culture and a community, and really care and have compassion. So that's all I wanted to add is the data piece of it, so that we know, like, we have a long ways to go. I want Minnesota to be a state that's not just welcoming, but that all of our kids and our families feel like they belong here. And there's no way that if we're having these removal policies that our next generation feels like they belong.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's, thank you. And that beautiful boy is so gorgeous. I want to reach to the computer and hold him. And I love babies. I love baby head too. I could smell baby head the rest of my life and I would be happy. I think also, you know, not just from my own personal experience, but the work I do as a child, the work I've done over my career as a provider when I was working as a child psychologist throughout, you know, the first 20 years of my career as a clinician, really focused on historical trauma and its impact on our communities. It focused on mental health and substance abuse and a number of other issues that placed our families at such greater risk for becoming, finding ourselves in this situation. I worked most of my life early on in my career, because I moved to the West Coast. I worked on the West Coast and I came back to Minnesota 2 years after my sons were born in 2009. And it was so hard for me when I got back to Minnesota, to see the situation in which our state is in with respect to the removal of Native children and the things that we're struggling with at that. Because, you know, I was around and I was a child of the 1960s and I came up through the 1970s. And, you know, my mom and so many of our community leaders in Minneapolis and in this region were fundamentally involved in sort of the development and the beginning conversations around what became Indian child welfare, right? And Minnesota should be ashamed of itself in terms of this one specific situation, because we are the birthplace of Indian child welfare, right? The fact that we are worse off than even when I was a child is so incredibly disheartening and upsetting and at times angering for me, right? Because those policies are directly related to racial inequities in healthcare and all kinds of other situations and education and a number of other things that we don't sort of, like, as a state really address very accurately, right? And very well. And we must do a better job with that, So
one of the things that we worked really hard on, which shouldn't have been as hard, a couple updates from what we did this year is we implemented an ICWA training, like a mandatory training for all social workers mm-hmm. across the state, because it's not just our ICWA workers that need to understand it. It's, you know, it's everybody who's working as social workers or in any, you know, sort of capacity that's working with kids on and off the reservation. And so it's sad that, like, we have to work so hard for a mandatory training, but, you know, we recognize the faults that we have in a state. And that's the nice part about having, like, myself, Jamie Becker Finn, Mary Kunish, Lieutenant mm-hmm. Governor Peggy Flanagan in these spaces, because we're able to give adequate voice to these issues in our communities, so we can hopefully, you know, work towards better understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank God we have you and all of your colleagues, those amazing women who are doing that work to advocate and to raise up our voices as a community. But we all actually, every single one of us individually, not just collectively, but every single one of us have a responsibility to do that in both our personal and our professional roles, I think, I kind of feel. So I try to do that in my own work, not just professionally, but when I talk with people that I know, a lot of non-Native people, I help them to understand the situation, because they need to understand, like, the nature of the problem and why it's so profoundly impactful.
Wow. Can you guys hold on for a quick break here? This sure. has been very intense and very therapeutic for me and many people that have been spouting in here on Facebook Live and YouTube. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're here with Dr. Stately, State Representative Heather Keeler, and the rest of the crew. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a 5-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me, Wen. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex, recording sexual acts without permission, hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger, purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Line 3, treaty violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pinigigi, and thank you for your support.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Oh.
Dr. Stately, that wasn't good. I saw that. Hey,
no, that was a sad little howl.
So, I'd love. We have Dr. Stately on. and from Native American Community Clinic, but we also have a real gift. We have State Representative Heather Keeler on too today, and I want to just switch gears for a moment here and talk about the new federal mandate. And Heather, go ahead and jump in anytime here with Dr. Stately. But we see that there's a they really want to squash this thing now, Dr. Stately.
It's talking about COVID, if anybody's wondering.
Yeah.
And the vaccine and the mandates for the vaccine.
Just to be clear. Just to say.
You guys,
I was like,
Robert now, I was speaking
what,
in code.
What are you squashing?
Exactly.
I'm still a little verklempt from the second
segment. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, like, if you ever do, I'm not sure if you or how many of your listeners, like, go on the CDC website and follow and look at the COVID tracker tool. You know, if you just Google CDC and COVID vaccination tracker or COVID pandemic tracker, you'll see like the entire nation is like bright red. So, you know, the metric looks like, you know, goes from like, you know, blue parts of the country to like, you know, our, you know, I guess the, not the, country, not the map, but like the what's it called, the legend goes all the way from like, you know, fairly low risk or low concern to, which is a blue, all the way up to like bright red for like, you know, serious significant danger, like I guess like the highest degree of and that that reflects sort of like the amount of community circulation you're seeing in any given jurisdiction, whether it's a county or a state or the nation. And you know, right now the entire map is just completely red, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you click on the state of Minnesota and you kind of sort of, or Wisconsin, and you kind of zoom into that one state specifically, there's some counties that are not bright red. They're like, you know, light red or orange, which is still pretty serious. And there are practically no, like, you know, moderate to low severity in any of the counties in our region, which is scary and frightening, right? Well, it really does reflect.
Yeah, last year at this time with those particular numbers, we were shut down. We were in lockdown.
Yeah.
Oh, can
and
I
here
just
we are, it's the first week of school, and so many kids have gone back to school, and so many people are back in school, and under the age of 12, you can't get a vaccine, and like there are so many, you know. I asked my kids how their second day was when I got home from work, and sorry, the cat is ripping up a bag.
everyone's got and, cat issues.
Right? He was really happy to see me, won't leave me alone when I got home from work. But the thing is that, like, you know, so we know that like 30% of the new cases are, you know, our small children, kids under the age of 18, ending up in the hospital. A significant number of those people are very, very seriously ill. 99% of all the new cases right now, are all the cases currently like in the ICUs, are unvaccinated people who caught the virus and are struggling with the Delta virus. Like we are like exactly where we were almost a year ago with respect to this situation. And it baffles me that people will not get vaccinated or masks or any of these things.
Yeah. A guy that I know, he is the director of the Humane Society of the United States, director in Illinois. And he posted this on Facebook, and he does want everybody to know this, and you could look him up and find out. But his mother was fully vaccinated, and she had rheumatoid arthritis and was on a biologic medication that kind of suppressed her immune system so that she could live with her, you know, rheumatoid arthritis and live a normal life. But unfortunately, she got breakthrough infection. She got COVID and she recently died, and she was in her mid 60s. So, you know, it's really sad that I'm sure that she was infected by a person who was unvaccinated. Even though we know that people who are vaccinated can transmit COVID, we also know that they carry a much lower, they have a lower viral load in their body of the virus. So it is less likely. So it's sad. Mm-hmm. I want
Yeah, you know, it is very sad.
If you don't get vaccinated for yourself, get vaccinated for other people. She's a classic example.
Yeah. It's very sad.
Yeah. We're also hearing like a lot of those stories. Like I've seen a lot of the stories of people who have been like anti-vaxxers, anti-masks, you know, when they get really sick, mm-hmm. some of the last advice then that they're like telling their friends and family is like, they should have listened. Mm-hmm. And then they're like encouraging people because it's, you know, it's a sickness that's really painful. And it's not only painful for you as an individual. It's just really painful for your family to see people go through illnesses like this. So you're right. You know, it's, we all believe in community. I think that that's why we do a lot of what we do. And the vaccine is such a selfless act. Like we're doing it to really play a part in moving to the most healthy options that we can. And I kind of always think like, people put stuff in their body all the time. Wendy, you and I talk about being vegan and like meat and what's in meat. And like people put that in their body all the time and they don't know what's in it. Yet like people are so perplexed about having a vaccine that we're unsure about, you know, it's, it's really, I think it's gotten really politicized, which is dangerous when our common health for each other becomes very political. And we need to really move past that as a community and encourage people to look at the data and look at the stats because it will be too late for many of our relatives who are not following with us in this healthy journey.
Mm-hmm. I think what's
absolutely
scary,
I absolutely agree. I think one of my concerns that I have, and it kind of relates a little bit to like our earlier topic, is we're talking about how, you know, our most sacred ones are little Okanija, our little, you know, our children are, our, you know, you know, our babies, and, you know, the fact that they can't get vaccinated makes them so vulnerable in this particular situation. And so, like, we know from early research on the effectiveness of the vaccines to be able to sort of prevent serious illness. So you're less likely, if you're an adult, to get seriously ill and sick and possibly also die. Leaving your children without parents, which is a really important thing for them developmentally, not, you know, for them to continue to have care. But then the other part of that is also the possibility of transmitting the virus to your children who are unable to get a vaccine, and possibly making them ill is just, so one of the things I try to tell everybody that I know that will talk to me about it, and when I have opportunities like this platform and other radio shows I've been on, is to talk to people and help them understand, like, it's the best method we have for slowing down the transmission of the virus. It's the best method we have for improving our chances and our odds that we will eventually get to the place where there isn't enough hosts to live in this, with this virus to live in. And I don't know if did you watch the news recently that there's a new variant called the Mu variant that they've identified in Los Angeles. And that to me is frightening. That tells you how rapidly the virus is mutating at this point in time. And I think people often don't understand the nature of that and the dynamic of that. And every single time you the virus jumps from a person to another host, there's an opportunity for it to start to mutate. And so that's the other reason why vaccinating every possible person who is allowed to get the vaccine is really critical. You can kind of take the mutation portion out of that by sort of nixing that in the bud. So we are at a very critical time in our history right now. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Stately, thanks you so much for coming on your off day. And Heather Keeler, thank you so much for coming on. We're still here. We are the seventh
generation. We'll be back tomorrow.